Welcome to the Lax Worm and Coach Bear Show, your lacrosse odyssey for news, stories, and special guests. So sit back, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
Welcome to the show, everybody. A little earlier today, we have our guest this morning, Coach Sudan. Coach, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, please. You've been one of the guys we've been trying to get on. Bear keeps telling me he's got an in with you. He doesn't get you on. And I'm going, do you really know this guy? What's the story?
I love it.
Sometimes I have to fake it till I make it. All right. So, you know, it's like, yeah, I know.
I think you made it.
There
you go. So, Coach, how's everything going? I mean, obviously, we got a big day Monday, right? You got to be prepping and planning. You want to tell us your first pick
so we can
just get that over with now?
Yeah, that's not going to happen. But, a lot of time, a lot of things going on in college lacrosse and fifth years and trying to figure who's coming out. And, so it's a little more challenging than just a regular year. I think last year was similar. So kind of just rolling with the punches and understanding what we need to get better at. And that's the big key, is just, come out of a draft and get really good at some spots and better in others. You're good to go.
You make it sound easy. Bear told me this was difficult.
It's only as difficult as you make it. And I think Bear's an overthinker.
I agree with you, by the way. I'm going to agree with that statement.
I don't know whether that's a compliment or a backhand. I don't know how to take that. I've never been blamed for overthinking.
Oh, good. That's good. I would not say that about me.
Yeah. I do believe, is there anybody out there, Coach? I mean, I know you're allowed to talk to these college guys, but limited, we're going to have, such limited conversation just due to their eligibility, situation. I mean, how do you find out, is there anybody on the board that, isn't sure about whether they want to continue to play? Because it's such a unique situation this year. Is there anybody that we're going to be surprised doesn't get picked up? And everyone's like, well, he obviously didn't get picked up because he's still unsure if he wants to play or not.
Yeah, they did some good research on probably 60 guys. And then you do your research on your own to make sure they're coming out. So they actually did it. The PLL did a good job of reaching out to coaches and coaches, making sure that, they said, yes, they're staying, or no, they're coming out. So it was a good resource for us. It's a big social club, the lacrosse coaching world, and, it's pretty easy to get a hold of those guys, and they're pretty free to talk to you, most of them. It's tough this time of year, obviously, with, their conference play and getting towards playoffs and whatnot. But, so we're pretty much set with the guys that we want, and our board's deep enough. And, we've been doing this for so long, Coach Monty and I, that we view things far different than other people, I think. So we're always surprised when guys that are on our board drop to us, at our later rounds. So, I'm hoping that is the situation this year. I don't know. Hopefully I'll be pleasantly surprised that some guys will be sitting around at 12 and 20 that we don't expect to get. But, We will see. That's the fun of it.
So, Coach, you obviously, just to bring everyone up to date, I mean, I think it goes without saying, but, the coach of the Chrome at the PLL, you were with the Rattlers in the MLL. What is the difference between the two? Is there a difference between the two? From a draft standpoint.
It's very, very similar. I think the COVID piece makes it different because you're dealing with, this one, I think we're doing on FaceTime, so I think it'll be easier. But I know last year's people were having issues with their Wi-Fi, and so Very similar to what's gone on in the past with the MLL, but you know, the PLL in general has been very player oriented, and understandably so. And I think the format and everything that they've tried to accomplish, they have up to this point, within reason with the COVID. So, yeah, no, I couldn't be happier. And I think that they got everybody's interests, best interest in mind. And, you know, they're doing the best they can. And there's a lot of excitement about it. And, you know, I'm sure there's going to be some challenges like COVID and along the way. But, you know, there's a lot of energy behind this and a lot of investors that, you know, care a whole lot about lacrosse.
Yeah, they certainly, you know, it's funny. We talk about this every time we talk about PLL, you know, and the old PLL versus MLL, and I'm not even sure that's a thing anymore. But, you know, the PLL just seems to have kind of hit on all cylinders, even through the COVID situation last year and being in the bubble in Utah the whole bit. It seemed as though, you know, it went fairly smoothly. It sounds like they've got a pretty good management group, you know, in the off the corporate offices there, just to make sure that this goes without a hitch. Is that what you're feeling?
Yeah, I think it's far more professional. I think it's far more, you know, timely. Working with the front office guys is different. The PLL is like I said, I think they're just doing it right, top to bottom. Mm. There's always challenges, and there's always people that, you know, might not appreciate, you know, some ways things are done, especially when you get a bigger group of guys around. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, we all believe in what they're trying to accomplish, and we're really happy to be involved.
So, Coach, you once the Rattlers moved out of Rochester, where you know your home base. Went down to Dallas. You had decided, you know, that was going to be a little difficult for you as far as travel and making that work. And I know that was extremely difficult for you because you had such a close relationship with that squad. And then you're back, you know, and now there's no home games. They're traveling. What has changed? Like, what changed your mind? Like, what made you think? I mean, obviously, this team that came available, for people that don't know, had a lot of, you know, Rattlers on the squad. So
yeah,
it probably made it a little easier for you, but at the same time, the travel's still not easier. What changed for you?
I think the biggest thing that happened in the timing of when they went to Dallas was my son's sophomore and junior, like, you know, before his sophomore and before his junior summer. And I wanted to be a part of like the whole recruiting trail and everything that he needed. And I just felt like I had kind of abandoned him for like 7 years. So that was weighing heavy on my mind. And, you know, taking a ton of Fridays off to leave and get down there, just, I don't have those days, right? And as a school teacher. So I think it was just easy. It was an easy way out for me to go. You know, I had a club program that I ended up selling, but, you know, he had a pretty good team, and it was kind of nice to be able to just focus on that in the summers. And, you know, became really close with him traveling all over the place, where my wife was taking him to Lehigh and Baltimore and to all these different tournaments. And I just felt like I was missing out. Mm. And it almost was the same feeling as the day I stepped away from the MLL as a player. Like, I just felt like I was missing my kid. And, you know, and then as the opportunity, you know, came up again, he was grown up. He's driving around. He just committed to school and was like, okay, I can do this again. So, and I sold my lacrosse club too, which helped.
Yeah, so that's interesting because we hear this quite a bit, and it seems to be happening more. It seems like all you guys right now are all in that same age bracket where you have your kids are at that age. We've heard this all, you know, all year long about commits and they're the familiar names, you know. It's kind of an interesting right. situation going on, and we've heard this story along. It takes a lot, and I, you know, if you haven't been in lacrosse from a coaching perspective, certainly I don't understand what you and the Bear have gone through in your levels, but, you know, I've been the travel team. I've been the youth program in high school. It does take up a ton of time, and, you know, I used to joke with my wife. I would give her a kiss, you know, at the beginning of the season, take it out to dinner, buy her flowers, and then I wouldn't see her until August or September. So, but I don't think people realize how much it takes from your personal life.
It does. It does a ton. And, you know, that's what we do though. Right. So when I met my wife, I was playing for the Nighthawks here in Rochester, and then the Rattlers came along, and, you know, I was gone 42 weekends a year. You know, even if it was a home game, I had practice Friday night, shoot around Saturday, game set. Like, I was useless yeah. to my wife around the house. And, like, it's game day. I gotta prepare. You know, it was just probably an excuse, but.
I was going to say, I
can't
still
be honest with ourselves, right?
I still use that.
So, yeah. So, yeah, so then, you know, the playing years ended, and then it ended up being I got this opportunity to coach for the Rattlers, and it was like mid-season, and it was the first year back in Rochester, and they were 0-6. So the guy I interviewed with, and the interview was funny, right? So I go into the interview preseason. I'm like, so – you know, we're going through the interview, and I know the one guy really well because I worked in the organization for a while before I was a teacher, and he was the head soccer coach, but he was the GM for the Rattlers. And I was like, can I just ask you guys who else you're interviewing? And they were like, well, we're interviewing BJ O'Hara. I was like, why are you not hiring BJ O'Hara? And they looked at me like I was absolutely crazy. I go, the last time he was in Rochester, he won a championship. Like, why would you not hire him? And they were like, oh, we're thinking about rebranding the entire team and changing the name. And I was like, oh, okay, I get it. So, well, I'll tell you why I could be effective. And so I didn't get the job. And they kept the Rattler name. And I got a call after they lost back-to-back games to, I'm not sure what they called them, Hamilton. They played in Hamilton, so that Toronto team.
Yep.
And, you know, I had to go to my wife and say, okay, here it comes again. I'm going to be gone every weekend. You know, ask her permission. And she was like, oh, yeah. And something lit back up in me during those years that, like, being around that level of guys was just something I missed more than I remember. Like, you know, it almost like I coached lacrosse for high school for years and don't get the butterflies I got the first year of coaching the pros. And, mm-hmm. you know, still do to this day. You know, you walk out there, you're like, holy crap, you're going to get after it right now. So.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that the butterflies, you know, you got these guys. Obviously, we all look at these guys from the outside, and we're looking at them. We're saying, you know, a lot of them are coaches. A lot of them are, you know, they're all certainly the high-end players. It's just funny from a coaching perspective to have these guys, I would imagine, you know, come into the locker room and you're looking around, and it's the who's who of lacrosse. I mean, I would gather that I don't care who you are, you're going to get some butterflies from that.
Yeah, well, I was in that. Those are my people, right?
Yeah.
You know, I was on the world team twice, and so I'm used to being around. Like, those are the guys I like. Like, those are the guys I need, but those are my people, you know? So, yeah, no.
I think Suda's butterflies comes from when he wants to play. I was going to say, sometimes. Your butterflies is because you want to suit it up.
I'm not going to lie. I did suit up in some practices.
Did you?
During the Rattler years.
That's awesome.
Just throw a helmet and gloves on and go stand in the corner because we had 12 guys at practice on a Friday night.
Oh boy.
Like I can play a little attack.
So Sudo, this is our second cup of coffee show. We generally dive right into we get what we call our legends of the game, and you know, we love to share the stories of our legends. Unfortunately, I know you're up against a time clock here that's going to cut you short, because you are a teacher. You're getting after it, still teaching the youth here. So we're going to flash to this draft since we are against a clock. This is such a weird draft. I know, like, you know, I'm looking at all the different people's like projected draft picks, and I used to laugh, as you know, like you mentioned, like some of those guys would fall to you that you didn't expect. And I know at the Ohio Machine, the same thing happened to us. Like, I'm like, how are we getting picks that, you know, that we, I thought this guy would be gone, you know? It's like, and you're right, everyone sees value differently. But
for
this
sure.
draft, woof. I mean, we got so many guys. I mean, I'm looking at everyone's draft things. I see one, I feel like it might be the Lax All-Stars. I'm not even sure they have Jeff Teat in their first round. I'm like, and I don't know who's the experts out here. You know, like, I mean, there's the Kyle Devitts of the world and Carcaterra and, you know, and Lax All-Stars. And I also know how, you know, the coaches, sometimes we keep our picks close to our chest, you know, and we kind of throw out some names and say, hey, look, these are guys that are all, you know, pretty good, obviously. But, I mean, has it been difficult, or do you look at it and say, this is really our 10 guys that fit our needs and we're rolling with them? Or has it been like, wow, there, or we could go this way, or we could go this way? I mean, how are you and Monty handling that?
Well, I think the big thing is, like, you know, you put together your own mock drafts, right? So Jocko's got one, I got one, you know, Nick Fiorentino, my son-in-law, who's my other coach, has one, and we kind of marry them all together and take a look. And then when we get to 12 and 20 and 28 this year, like, you know, we're hoping there's guys there that can actually dress for us, but we doubt it, you know? I think at 3, we're going to get a really, really special guy. And then at 12, there's a good chance that if the guys are sitting there, we get somebody that can play for us. If the guys don't, then we're, you know, I think at 12, someone plays for us as well. But at 20 and 28, I don't know if they play for us. And that's just the way it is. And then you just try to draft the depth at that point. You've been through this. So, you know, some of the college drafts in the past were like, you know, 6 rounds, and, you know, they did things a little differently as far as like the old supplemental draft, and on an expansion year, you just lost the guys and you had to draft them back. But, so I think, you know, you look at Kark's picks, and, you know, I never had a conversation with Kark. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I talked to Ryan Boyle a little bit, and I'm pretty honest, like, especially with my first pick, you know, the way we stand right now, like, I kind of basically tell them a couple guys that I believe if this guy's sitting there, we'll take them. And if not, we could possibly take this guy. But as far as the later draft, you just don't know who's going to still be sitting there. Like, you're like looking at guys that you might take at 3, or, you know, with your first pick, and all of a sudden they're sitting there at your second pick, and you're like, you learn from it for the next year, like, which guy is going to slip, you know? And you never know, but it's just kind of after a while, you've been through, you know, at this point I've been through 7 drafts, 8 drafts maybe, and it's just surprising that every time, you know, that pick right before you, you're like, oh, they're going to take so-and-so, they're going to take so-and-so, and then, bam, they don't take them, and you're like, holy Christmas, we, you know, and we rely on our players a lot to help, you know, and help inform us of guys and what kind of character they have, and, Are they going to be a good culture guy in the locker room? Like that, you know, Barry, you were the same way with your guys in Ohio. It's like you had a really tight-knit team. And, you know, if you don't have that, you know, you see, you know, some of the teams of the recent past, like, struggle, and they look like they're all superstars, and it's just like they don't have the culture, they don't have the cohesiveness, and they don't want to run through a wall for each other. So, I think that's the long answer. It's interesting how things fall. It's exciting, and you know, you get that rush of adrenaline every time you realize you're going to get another guy that you want. So I'm excited for Monday. We'll see how it goes.
Coach, do you think that with Jared Bernhardt talking football talk, is he such a special kid that – and I maybe I don't know how the PLL will handle rights. I don't know if they handle it the same way as the ML did, but if you draft Jared and he's unavailable this summer, I don't know if he can maintain his rights or not, you know, as a pick. Is that been brought up? Is that something that, you know, people are willing to take the flyer, especially since your rosters are so deep and you don't necessarily need, you know, three guys to participate right away? Has that been discussed?
Yeah, and I think we have a game plan if he falls to a certain one of our picks, that if he's still there, that we have to, like, take a shot at him. And I think everybody feels the same way. But that D2 football or D2, you know, he could really go play 2 years of football, you know, and that's the sticky part. So the way it works in the PLL is if he doesn't play this summer and he doesn't play next summer, he's gone off your protected list. Mm. So then he would go into the player pool, and then he would end up coming out of the player pool in waivers when that first waiver period opens up. So, I don't know. I talked to Jesse and you know, I'm pretty confident he's going to play at least 1 year, and I think he's going to do really well. And how do you leave something if you can do it another year and, you know, potentially have a free education for it? So, you know, we rank that risk maybe differently than some other people, right? So. But he'd be a really special guy to end up on our team if we could get him eventually. And if we can't draft him, maybe it's out of waivers, you know.
I'm looking at these boards, and I also know that some of the teams that have had some top players aren't maybe having the success that they had planned. And I know that can affect certain players at times. I look at the board, and I, you know, like some of these guys' stuff, and I see Tarafenko in there, and I see Trey LeClaire, and I know Ohio State obviously a good program, and these guys have been doing it for a long time. And I look at Trey LeClaire, I mean, this guy was on Team Canada as you know, one of the youngest players to suit up for him since probably, you know, the Gates. And then you have Tarafenko, it's a do-it-all, you know, a do-it-all, which I in that league, a do-it-all can be very special for you. Has there been some guys that you feel, you know, maybe have slipped, you know, a little bit just due to getting lost in a shuffle?
I don't know. I think there's probably six really, really kind of sought after guys and four that are spectacular. You know what I mean? It doesn't mean that the other guys wouldn't be a huge part of your team, but like complete different makers day one. I think there's four, five, six, maybe. So, you know, I think guys do get lost in the shuffle, and I think there's guys like, you know, a Jeff Traynor out of UMass, and of course I'm a UMass guy, and you look at Jeff Traynor and you're like, well, he didn't really have a great year this year, but his career was incredible. So he could get lost in the shuffle a little bit, and, you know, I think that kind of stuff happens. If you watch Doc Aikens early in the year, you know, his stock was going down steadily, and then all of a sudden he got his feet under him, and, you know, I think he's really a guy people are looking to pick up.
What about Tahoka? I mean, obviously a special talent, doesn't finish the season. Do you think that's where his stock drops, or is he still right? No one cares that he didn't finish the season. He's just that good.
I don't know how people feel about him, honestly. I don't have, you know, I certainly don't have a need for him. So he's not necessarily on my board. So I really haven't talked much about it. I know that was a weird situation for him, and, you know, I hope it goes well for him.
So, Coach, I know we got to wrap up with you. You've got to get in and teach our kids to be smarter than we are. So we'll put it that way. But listen, we appreciate you coming on the show and chatting with us. It's always great to speak with you, and good luck Monday on the draft. I have to ask one question, the Gaudette situation. I know it's old news, but did that surprise you at all, that whole thing and how it blew out of proportion?
You know what? During the game, I didn't really realize. I knew he was getting under people's skin, and I knew that was kind of his MO. Mm. But I had no idea, like, the lengths it would go to. So I was super shocked right after the game. And, you know, we had some conversations. Like, I wasn't I was like, yeah, you stepped over the line. Like, yeah, you don't do that. And he was just caught up in the moment. Like, he's a really good guy. And he's kind of, like, he's not a very fun guy to play against because he's always in your ear. But, you know, he feels like he gets an advantage doing that. And as long as it's in the flow of the game, I don't really care. But when they mic you up, yeah, you know, that's when kind of the rubber hit the road. And it weighed heavy on him. The Redwoods took it out on him. And, you know, it was hard for him to get his feet under him. But we kind of went and said, hey, you know, if you're going to mic him up, let's just not do interviews with him. You know what I mean? And then they decided all together. I think Matt decided he didn't want to be mic'd up at all. And you know, they could have done whatever they wanted. It's in their contract that, like, you have to be mic'd up if we want to mic you up. But I think they understood that it was not letting him be the player that he could be, you know?
Yeah, that was a tough one. That was a tough one, but... Well, Coach, listen, We appreciate it. Good luck Monday. We'll all be hanging out, watching, and seeing who you pick. My guess, my feeling is it's a middie, but that's an offensive middie. That's me. I don't know about Bear,
okay,
but that's where I'm going. And I would look at maybe a Caraway. That's where I would go.
Well, thanks for your input. I might have to call you back.
Just thought I'd.
All right, guys.
All right, Coach. Thanks a lot.
Have a good day.
You too, okay, man.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, Bear, there you go. What do you think?
Well, listen, I would – that's the last person I ever questioned their picks, because I know in our – during all drafts, we'd sit there and watch Sudo and Monty and, you know, and Bill. You know, he had Bill on his staff. They would sit there and pick these guys, and you're like, who is that guy? You know, like, next thing you know, the guy's like, you know, killing us or whatever. And they, you know, they're so methodical about how he puts a team together and you know, he gets the right, you know, he's got probably one of the best locker room builders, you know, in the game. And I've said it before, there's not, I mean, I know some of these guys have two summers now under their belt as far as coaching pro lacrosse, but there's something to be said for you've done it, you've been there, done that, and he certainly is one of the masters at it. You know, in my mind, you know, I know what cards he was dealt at for Rochester. I mean, as far as like budget, and because we were very similar in Ohio, and whenever you're competing for a championship every time, you're basically, you know, the Florida Marlins. You're not the New York Yankees. Yeah. You're doing something special. Let's put it that way.
No, listen, there's no doubt that this guy's the real deal, right? I mean, you know, Coach has been doing this for a while, as you said, and I think he's you know, like he said, you know, you pick people that you know, hope fall to you, and all of a sudden they're falling to you, and you're kind of I got to ask you though. You've got these guys, right? And you've done your research, and all of a sudden they fall to you, and you're saying there's no way this guy's falling to me. Do you sit there and kind of second guess yourself and say, you know, I didn't think Joe Smith was going to fall to me, and now here he is, and I'm a little bit, did I miss something? I mean, does that go through your head, or you just grab him?
No, it does happen, and it happened to us. You know, I really honestly had no idea that Gutterding was going to fall to us, you know, I think it was like the last pick in the first round. And it was one of those things like, yeah, we're going to have to take him. But for us, we also had Mark, you know, Cockerton, and it was just crazy, you know, because we have such a high caliber player at that position already, and really didn't see either one of those guys playing midfield, you know. So the end result ended up being, you know, Boston got Mark Cockerton for probably way too good of a deal. And, you know, it's like one of those things where you look and it's hard because we didn't have a lot of time to think about it. You know, we didn't, it's not, you know, we didn't like, I had no idea that Justin was going to fall, you know, to us at this pick. I mean, it was possible, but it wasn't like something that we've spent a lot of time thinking about. Yeah. So those things are crazy because the ripple effect of the pick.
How much work are you guys putting in now as a coach? To give listeners a little perspective of what's going on now in the coaching staff. And, you know, here's Coach Sudo. He's got to go teach, you know, in school, his regular
yeah,
job.
Right.
But what is going on in your head? I mean, you know, do you have your picks set now? Or are you saying, no, I'm good? Or is this weekend going to be kind of a cramming weekend?
Well, I don't know because I felt like we had some margin for error in the MLL as far as, yeah, you had 8-9 rounds. Yeah, you had 8-9 rounds, so you could, you know, which is amazing because you look at the players that are currently playing in the ML in the PLL, and you look at what rounds they were drafted in. I mean, some of those guys were 4th, 5th, 6th round draft picks.
Yeah,
those rounds no longer exist. So, you know,
well,
let's
continue this conversation. Let's bring our next guest in, Bear. I know you want the mic all to yourself, but we're going to have to bring someone else in to
pump your brakes.
Dan, how you doing?
Hey guys, thanks for having me on. It's good to be here.
So Dan, I was telling Bear, you and I have a history.
Yeah, way back when, right? Way back, you know, so long ago that the MLL was playing playoff games.
Yeah, right. It was funny because when Bear said, "Hey, you know, Dan's going to come on," I said to Bear, "You know, we have a history," and he thought it was like a negative history, and I said, "No, it's not negative." But it was funny. I was telling my wife you were going to be on because Bear, I'll give you the story. So I was looking for someone to do color at the semifinals and at Fairfield U. And I just threw it out there. I said, you know, who wants to do it? Dan responded and had lunch with him, chatted with him, and said, all right, cool, let's go. And, you know, without even talking after that, we jumped on and we called the game. So it was kind of fun.
Yeah, that was unbelievable. I mean, and what an opportunity. Like, that's one of those things where you respond and you definitely don't expect to to hear anything. You're just like, who am I? But then, you know, like you said, we had that lunch. I think we talked a lot about, you know, it was a Lizards Outlaw game, yep. Outlaws game at Fairfield U, and the teams were both so good and everything. We got to, you know, beat some of the teams the night before and really, you know, really did a good job, I think, preparing and like trying to, you know, put a really a professional level of call and production on the game. But like, you know, that I probably said thank you a bazillion times for that, but man, what an opportunity that was for me. And it was so funny. Then again, when you guys reached out to me to join you today, I was like, of course I'll do it. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's great. It's good to have you on. Dan, tell me your last name. I always butcher it. So
it's Arestia.
Arestia. That's what I thought it was, but my wife says, no, that's not. I said, no, I think it is. So, all right, we got that down.
You were right.
Hey, Bear, you follow Dan on Twitter, don't you? He puts a lot of stuff out. He's one of these guys that is thought provoking on Twitter, I think.
Yeah, no, for sure. Dan, I appreciate all that you do, you know, for the game and putting out educated thoughts. And I, you know, it's funny. It's like these guys pop up on my feed and I'm like, I don't even know who this guy is, you know, but hey, I like reading his stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, honestly, Dan, that's how I came across you. Was like, yeah, you know what? He's putting some time into this. I can respect that. You know, the people that just throw stuff against the wall to see if it sticks. I you know, whatever. But you're not one of those guys, and you put a lot of time into it. So I don't, you know, for our listeners, like, what's your background? How do you get into the game, and you know, what makes you you know, tick as far as like wanting to know this information and pass it on through social media?
So, you know, for me, I mean, like, to go way back, I started playing lacrosse as like a third grader growing up. I live in Connecticut now. I grew up here. So I started playing lacrosse way back when, played all the way through high school, played in college. And then after college, I was working locally. And, you know, I had the opportunity, because I was working for a local school system, to get into coaching here, first at the youth level, and then, you know, through some sort of just growth and my network growing there, started coaching a club team that led me to coach at Darien High School for a number of years.
The Blue Wave.
So lacrosse has been just like part of my life for, you know, I mean, like, it's scary to say it out loud, but we're getting close to like 30 years. So I've always loved it. And then, you know, when the game, the MLL launched, and it was right at the end of my high school career, and we had like the Bridgeport Barrage. So like those summers, we would go down to Barrage games all the time, because it was really nearby where I lived. And, you know, the pro game, I always kind of felt like, you know, it's with the MLL and everything, I was like, man, the level of play and like the level of athleticism and ability and like the stuff that will just get you out of your seat and say, wow, I can't believe I just saw that, when you watch a pro lacrosse game, is as impressive as it is in any of the big four sports. I genuinely believe that. Like, it's as entertaining and as fun and as eye-popping as things you'll see in any sport, as things you see at a pro lacrosse game. But I always just wanted, you know, you want it to be bigger. You want it to have more people have their eyeballs on it, because I'm certain that if more people saw it, they'd like what they saw and they'd come back to see more. So, you know, part of that was I want to try and lend my voice to this, because I had also been working as a journalist for a while, again, locally here in Connecticut. After I stopped coaching and I had to get married and get a regular 9-to-5 and all that. You know, so, you know, I was doing a journalism thing, and I tried to stay as close to lacrosse as I could. So when I wasn't coaching anymore, I reached out to a couple of different people to try and gauge their interest. And at that point I had a little journalism background just for like game coverage and stuff. So I reached out to like Terry and Matt at IL, and they were like, yeah, you can cover games for us in the Northeast if you want. We need people to go cover Yale and Army. I was like, oh, that sounds like a dream. So I was doing that. And then Chris and Safe over at, when they were at College Cross for SB Nation, they were like, yeah, you can do something for us. Just, you know, do some weekly stuff, and we'll have you, you know, jump on the pod once in a while. So I started doing that, and that just kind of ballooned into where I am now, with trying to kind of, you know, like you guys said, it's thought provoking. I think that's very polite, but I try to cover the game, you know, with a level of honesty that I think makes sense. You know, if the coverage is that everybody is good all the time and everybody always makes the right move, then we're not really covering the sport, are we? Right? Like, I think it's better to be honest about and try and cover it with a level of professionalism that's like, you know, maybe this player isn't a good fit for this team. Here's why. Here's maybe why this guy is. Here's why this might have been a mistake. Here's why this maybe didn't work. Here's why this did and why it was great. So, you know, I think when it comes to trying to cover the game, that's what I try and do. I try and have fun when I do it. And, you know, I'm sure there's feathers that might get ruffled along the way. I never mean to do that. But, you know, that's kind of where I am now, is trying to, you know, offer a perspective that's got some support and makes some sense and isn't just like everybody made a great pick and got better. Because that never happens in a draft. That never happens in an offseason. It never works like that.
Well, let's jump into that, Dan. And Bear, you ready? You did your homework, right? Bear's doing his.
Listen, I'm just reading Dan's. I'm just going to agree with him on everything. You know, it's just easier that way for me.
So, you know, Bear and I were chatting ahead of time, and we were saying, you know, the Teat Sowers kind of, you know, who do you go with if you've got that number one pick? And you know, is it Teat? Is it Sowers? What do you see? And I'll throw this out to you too, but first to Dan, is there Which one is the one you go with, Dan? Teat or Sours?
I don't think you can make a mistake with this pick, really. Mm. I think they're both going to be like franchise defining kind of players. For me, that it's been since 2020. It's been Sours for me. Mm. You know, when the conversation was Sours or Amen, I was like, I'm taking Sours. For me, I just like that. And the Sours I want is the Princeton Michael Sours. The Duke Michael Sours is a little bit different because of the way he's used in their offense. You see Duke runs a lot more ISO sets than Princeton did. And there was a lot of what was happening at Princeton that moved Sours all over the field. We finally got to see Sours above the goal line a little bit last night, and that worked out pretty well for Duke. So, you know, the Sours that I want is that Sours who's absolutely electric behind the goal, but can take his man to just about anywhere on the field and free his hands and then feed with surgical precision and can shoot and score from distance. I think he's a guy, and part of this too is the personnel that's already on the Atlas. I like the group that's there already to play with Sours. You know, so I think he's as a distributor, I don't think it takes the ball out of Eric Law's stick all that much. And Eric Law is a guy who can get his in a ton of different ways anyway. So I don't think having another, you know, quarterback style guy behind the goal is going to be a problem for a player like Eric Law. Mm. And then the other guys they have there, you know, if you can have Sours moving all over the field and finding seams to feed shooters like, you know, Romar, who will have more time and room shots, which is where he does his best. You know, you want that percentage to be up a little higher, but, you know, that's still a strength of his. Brian Costabile showed in year one, he has 2-point range. You know, there's lots of players on that team who will benefit from getting time with a guy like Sours in the lineup. You know, so for me, that's where I'd go. With Pete, you get a guy who can play anywhere and can, you know, can win a matchup for you is a Dodger. And what he does maybe a little bit better than Sours is read the where the help is coming from in a way that he can look off and in a way that, you know, confuses the defense about whether or not they really need to help on Jeff Teat or not. Like if you show to Jeff Teat and you're in between, he's going to find something to punish you for being in between, for not doubling him or for, you know, for leaving your man. He's going to find a way to punish you somewhere on the field in that moment. And that's why he's so, so deadly. And of course, he's not a guy that you can just kind of halfway go to because he's a good enough Dodger to get his own shot against a lot of defenders anyway. So, you know, I think with him, one thing that, you know, somebody came at me on Twitter and said a knock on him was that, you know, he got face guarded in the Ivy League tournament a couple of years ago and just totally disappeared. But, you know, some of that is kind of the scheme I think that Cornell was playing at the time. And you would have loved it if Teat was like chasing balls out of bounds so he could just pick the ball up and start with it that way, but it just didn't happen as much. But, you know, I think it's a lot harder to take Teat out of a game than people who think that what happened in the Ivy League tournament is how you do it.
Bear, you agree with all that, right?
Yeah, he just took all my thunder. Oh, yeah. I'm good. Good job, Dan. No, hey. Listen, I agree, and I think it's like one of those things is it really is going to come down to team needs. You know, there's generational players, and with this COVID and everything that happened, we have so many generational players that are just so all jammed up now. You know, and it's like you're looking at, these guys are obviously they're incredible. You know, like, but if you can't win a face-off, how many touches do those guys get? And you have a generational faceoff guy, you know, it's like, there's so many different things that ways to look at it, you know? And it's like, I have to agree with Dan that, you know, either one of those guys are going to bring such a unique dynamic to your offense. Sometimes you gotta be a little unselfish when you're the new guy too. You know, can they move? Can they move around? Can they come out of the box? Can they help you in areas like that? And I think both those guys could. So it'll be interesting for sure to see how the draft falls with those guys.
So Dan, let's chat a little about. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I think if you're looking for a guy to run out of the box, I think it's probably gonna be Teat that you go with. I think he's probably more suited to that on day one than Sours is. But yeah, you know, I called this the other day. It's the 83 NFL draft. Like, you're getting Elway or Marino. Like, is it the end of the world if you end up with either one of those guys? Not really. You're gonna be okay. You know.
You don't want to take O'Brien?
No. No, nobody's gonna jet this one.
let's chat about the Atlas for a second, because they made some, big news moves, essentially, Rabel going to Boston and then Pinnell being traded. In my mind, I said, the Rabel made sense to me, right? Because he's probably retiring. Is in my head, I'm saying he's probably going to retire shortly. I don't think he's, he's got a lot going on with the league in the back office kind of setup, never mind on the field. And, you retire with on the Boston Cannons where you started. So it made sense to me. I think that opens up a spot on the Atlas that is probably, although you can't sleep on Rabel, I think, as he's getting a little older and the kids are getting younger, it gets a little tougher. But the one I was curious about was the Pinnell trade. Did you agree with that? Do you think that's opening up for this particular draft?
With the Pinnell trade, I thought the move was going to be, I thought he was going to get traded. Mm-hmm. I didn't maybe see the Woods as the fit right away, given what they already had kind of at attack. But, I think there's a way to make that work. It looks like they're going to run Jules out of the box there, and try and, I would imagine, create matchup issues where you put, you have a six on the field at a time. That's something like, Pinnell, Kavanaugh, Garnsey, Henningberg, Jones, Perkovic. All right, try and guard us and see how that goes for people. Yeah. So, I from that point of view, I think your top six is looking like it can create a lot of problems. And if those Dodgers are drawing eyes and are drawing help defense, and Miles and Sergio can spray from two like they did last summer, then you've definitely got something there. I think with the Atlas, you look at the roster moves, like you said, with Rabel and Pinnell, but also, Hartzell is gone. Ryan Brown is gone. Mm-hmm. That's four Team USA players who aren't on the Atlas anymore. So it was quite the blow up for the Bulls, I think. And I think it was the right thing to do. I've been pretty vocal about that. I don't think they could run it back again. You've had 2 years with, year one, they didn't do by very much. They added Rob Pinnell and somehow, finished last in the league, I think. So, it was time to go in a new direction. So I think this was the right thing to do, but, I how they come out of the move that they made, that being, what do they do with all these draft picks they acquired is going to be, the test is going to be what they, how this offseason's really graded. If you acquire all these picks, great. If what you do with them is draft poorly, or you draft guys that don't end up working out for you, then you're really going to be struggling.
They've got four picks in the first two rounds, right? So, I mean, they could do some serious damage in rebuilding a team very quickly. And they've got obviously the first pick, and we talked about that. You're going with Sowers. Is there a team in the PLL at the moment that, certainly I would say the Atlas needs to have a good draft, right? Because they've kind of decimated their stars, if you will, their power, their as you said, Team USA players. Is there a team, is that it? Or is there another team that really needs to have a good draft in your mind?
I think the Water Dogs need to punch up the offense a little bit. I like what they've done to this point. I thought their entry draft was great. I thought Burns and they got Ben Randall really late, which I thought was a steal for them. And then you added, they got Schlosser as well. So, I think the guys they came out of the entry draft with were outstanding. I thought Copeland did a great job there, bolstering, a defense that needed a lot of help, getting a really smart, really athletic midfielder that can play and has a rapport who's with Courier, who's already there. I think they could stand to punch up the attack a little bit. And I think, what's lucky for them is they get to pick the guy who doesn't go between Sowers and
right,
Pete. So,
right.
That's going to go pretty well for them. But I think on the offensive end, I'd like to see them add a couple of pieces beyond who they get in that number two pick, whether it be, more of like an offense first midfielder, if you can wind up with, who knows if Docs or Connor Kearse will still be there by the time the Water Dogs make their second pick. But, guys like that who are going to be athletic, big Dodgers who can play from wings, can get their own shot, have some 2-point range, those kind of players, I think, are something that I'd like to see the Water Dogs add.
I always find the draft interesting because we look at, you keep talking about all these offensive guys, right? We're like, wow, look at the depth, you know, the depth here, the depth here. So everyone's hungry to get these top players. I'm looking at the defense, and every year I'm always like, man, defense, I mean, especially when all those PLL guys went, or MLL guys went to the, you know, went over to the PLL. I was like, really, the major, major difference is just defenders. Like, there's a couple guys that are obviously awesome, but, you know, like the Ben Randles and, a couple guys that stayed back. I was like, but overall, the depth at defense is a little bit of a struggle. And I'm looking at this draft here. I'm like, does everybody start to get a little tight when someone goes for JT, you know, early? And then they're like, whoa, wait a second. And next thing you know, the next pick is Jared Connors. You know, because they're like, oh, we got to go. We got to go with the defender now because, you know, they're coming off the board. And I think that happens at these specialty positions too. Like, start looking at goalie. Someone takes a goalie early and everyone starts to get a little nervous. Like, oh, maybe the second goalie is not going to be there later, so I better grab him now. Do you see that happening in this draft at all?
Yeah, you know, if there's a run on a position in the way you describe it, I think it's going to be, like you said, it's going to be a defense. You know, if there's JT at you know, sort of at the top as a close defender, there's Connors as the top LSM, maybe the top overall defender, depending on how you evaluate that kind of thing. But if you really need an LSM and you don't get Connors, you're looking at, like, you know, Ryan McNulty, who's a nice player, who's not going to be a top of the PLL guy coming in. You know, he's not going to set the world on fire. Just my prediction or whatever. I don't see him as that superstar level player right away. And then after that, you're probably looking at some guys who, you know, are playing close that maybe you try and move around a little bit. You know, at close, like we said, it's JT, it's Jack Keelty. You know, there's like Gibson Smith and Nick Grill, but, you know, there's rosters in the league where those guys won't make the team. They won't make a game day roster. You know, those guys aren't making the whips, or they're probably not making the woods. You know, there's teams with defensive needs and there's not enough pulls to go around. It's definitely a shallow position, like you said. So, you know, this is a year where if you are on the fence and you have a big defensive need and you're thinking, man, I can grab this attackman who's really good, or I can grab Jack Keelty and I don't pick again for 10 picks or whatever it is between picks for you, then you need to take Jack Keelty because he won't be there again. Like, teams are going to address that need if they can. I would say kind of early. If somebody gets reached for, it'll probably be a defender from a team that's worried about not being able to get the guy they want.
I would agree with you, Dan, because I think the depth of this from an offensive standpoint lends to that right now, right? You're going to, if you need a defender, you're going to grab knowing that there's going to be some pretty good players down the road that you're still going to be able to pick up. And I agree. I think it's something that if you need that position, grab it, because that's a thin area versus, you know, this offensive onslaught that's coming out, which is candidly, you know, it's certainly a deep draft, but also, you know, you brought something up and it's playing, you know, who's going to be playing, you know, who's going to make that roster. And I always look at it too, when you look at some of these teams, and we just talking to Coach Sudan, and it's like, you know, you have these positions so locked up, right? You know, you talk about an attack and it just seems so locked up. And then you draft an attack and then you don't see that person playing. Is in your opinion, are we going to see a lot of that with some of this? I mean, we're talking about this deep draft. Are there going to be some of these quote unquote stars that are coming out that may not make a roster?
I think that's going to be the case, depending on where guys go and the personnel that's already there. I mean, like, you know, again, just looking at the Woods as an example, we already talked about the attackmen that they do have when they added Pinnell.
Yep.
But they also just added, like, Ryan Lee in the entry draft. Like, which of those five guys, and then you start adding their midfield group, you know, there's 7, 8, 9 guys, who from that group are you sitting down to play one of these guys that you're taking out of school right now, unless it's if it's not one of these, you know, top one, top two guys in a position. So I think as you get into, like, even like late round 2 and into like mid round 3, those are places where you might see guys, you know, that's a place where if the Woods grab like an offensive player, it's like, okay, let's make our strength stronger a little bit. Let's add some depth.
Yep.
They could do that on the defensive end too. You know, the Woods really only have one need in this draft, but you know, that's kind of just one example. But like the Archers, you know, there's offensive talent everywhere. They're going to put an offensive lineup on the field where I don't know which of those guys you would even consider sitting down to take for somebody that's in this draft right now.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like those attackmen aren't going anywhere, and neither is, you know, Tom Schreiber or Connor Fields. So who's coming out of the lineup so you can play another attackman? You know, so I think teams will grab that big need that they have early first. You know, maybe you try and reach a little bit for a defender. If you're the Archers at five and, you know, and Ryan Tarasenko is sitting there and you have a short stick D midi need, or you have like a, you can grab a guy like him who literally can just do everything. So you dress one guy and one Ryan Tarasenko, and you have a short stick D midi, a second line O midi, a guy who can spell your face off player, a man down player, a wing guy. Like, you get all that from one roster spot, that, you know, that's what makes him as valuable as he is. Then, you know, I kind of like that fit there. You're probably not taking an offensive guy. I know I saw, you know, Carr had mock draft like Jake Caraway to them. I was like, I don't know if I'm taking Jake Caraway if I'm the Archers, because I don't know how I'm going to get him in the lineup.
I couldn't agree more with you. I think people are going to be shocked to see the fact that Tarasenko is just going to go, that he will go before a lot of these names. And just because of all the things you said, he's the best 19th guy on your roster that you can put out there. And it's just so many different times the last guy that you dress doesn't really, he plays like two or three reps. And if you can get a guy like him who could literally pick up a pole, go take a draw, play offense, play defense. I mean, like, he is the do it all. You know, he's a Swiss Army knife. And, you know, meanwhile, you have some of these offensive guys like a Mac O'Keefe or, you know, Tohoka. You're like, how does Tarasenko go ahead of them? And everything you just said, because who are you going to sit to put, you know, Tohoka out there? Who are you going to sit to put, you know, Ethan Walker out there? And you know, I'm looking at Ryan Tierney, who just, I mean, his release and his ability to stretch the field and, you know, he can probably bang two pointers from, you know, two MLL style 16 yards. And yet, I'm still not sure who they've set to play Ryan Tierney on any of these rosters, which is crazy. But maybe he's a guy that you can run out of the box, you know, just because of his 2-point, you know, range. I mean, it's going to be a very interesting draft.
Yeah. You know, I think a guy like Tarasenko could go earlier than people maybe expect, or, you know, nobody's eyebrows should go up if he doesn't make it out of like the first half of the first round, because he's so valuable. Mm-hmm. You know, a guy like a Jeff Traynor from UMass, who's the same kind of thing. He's going to put a one in 10 different categories in the stat book for you every time he takes the field. He's going to cause a turnover. He's going to win a ground ball. He's going to score a goal. He's going to have an assist. He's going to play, you know, on the defensive end for you. Those kind of guys where you get that versatility from just one dressed roster spot are super valuable. They're super valuable out of this draft. So, you know, a guy like Traynor, who, you know, I would love him to the Chrome. I don't know if I didn't hear you guys talking to Sudo, but I would bet Sudo would love a guy like a Jeff Traynor.
The name was mentioned.
You know, players like that. I think, you know, you can't have enough of those guys. And you know, who has a ton of players like that is the Whips, and it's not a mistake. You know, it's not a coincidence that, you know, they're going to be the defending champ. They have to be the odds on favorite again, because they have the same team again, plus a few more pieces to make themselves better. But they have a lot of those guys who can just do so many different things for you. Even if they're offensive end guys like a Brad Smith, who can just play everywhere, or, you know, you have Jake Bernhardt, who's going to play great D for you. He's going to take wings. He can play offense for you. You know, those kind of guys are so, so valuable. So, And you know, like, I would take guys like that ahead of, you know, it's not a knock on Mac O'Keefe. He's the best shooter in the draft. He's got a lefty cannon like, you know, you haven't seen in a long time. But is Mac O'Keefe getting his own shot in the PLL? Probably not. You know, I don't know if he's ready to beat PLL defenders right now. And is the idea going to be you draft Mac O'Keefe so you can run sets and picks for him to try and free his hands on a bunch of looks? And if that's like the type of player he is, Is that a first round player to you? I don't know. You know, for me, probably not. And again, not a knock on Mac O'Keefe. Again, best shooter in the draft, but is he ready to ISO or to try and create for himself, you know, in the PLL? He's going to need a lot of those two-man games from the wings. He's going to need to run that kind of offense that Penn State does now with that pick-down motion that sort of tries to free him over the top. But teams are good at defending that in the PLL. And the Poles, if he gets one in the PLL, are going to be physical with him and won't let him get that hands-free over-the-top, you know, look that he might have been used to there. So, you know, for me, I'd rather have the Ryan Tarasenko than a Mac O'Keefe.
Let's chat a little. You know, TD Ireland's in this, and you know, always the face-off guys. There's a lot of talk about, you know, TD and what he's done. He stayed. He's Denver, blah, blah, blah. Is he a first-round pick?
Yeah, because I think the Woods need him that badly. The Woods faced off at like 35%, 36% mm-hmm. last summer. They were getting crushed, and you know, it's because Perkovic and guys like that were hitting as many twos as they were that they were, you know, hanging around in these games and able to make up for some of those missed possessions. But that's the Woods' biggest need by far. You know, they're just going by position. Their defense is intact. I don't know if Landis is available for them this summer, but if he is, then that's, you know, they got better at defense again. They don't need a backup for Trautner. They have Phipps, who might even just win the job now. I liked that pick for them out of the entry draft. So they're set at goalie. Their offense, like we've covered, is loaded. You know, their poles are in a good spot. They have Neer and Harbison playing short stick D middy, which is outstanding. You know, the one spot where you really badly need an upgrade is faceoff. And if Erlin is sitting there at four, there's no way he should make it past the Woods.
Bear, give me your on the outsiders. Who are the outsiders picking? Because that team we went through the the draft, and where are
Dan,
you looking?
I don't know if you've got
coach?
A chance to listen to that. Yeah, Dan, I don't know if you got a chance to listen to the outsider draft, but we're kind of loaded right now.
Yeah.
We feel
group.
Good. We feel
they
good
beat
about
the Atlas.
Well, you know, we feel good about our group, and I'm telling you right now, I'm going with my first outsider pick overall is going to be Ryan Smith. I love the fact that he's going to be in a shot clock, a tighter shot clock. I think that's going to suit his game even better. I think he's a big target. Obviously a high draft pick in the NLL. I think his game will suit well in the PLL. However, unfortunately, I don't think we'll ever find out. So, but he'll have a jersey waiting for him for the outsiders, I'm sure.
Yep.
I'm a homer on that by the way.
I like Ryan Smith a lot too. There's not too many guys in college lacrosse who have more goals than Ryan Smith right now. Like he's I don't know what the scoring last night did to it, but I think, you know, before last night's game, he was like top three in the country in points. I think only maybe Gray had more. I think he had as many points as Sowers did going into last night, and he's scoring goals like crazy. And I mean, he's a physical, like a big body player who can, if he gets shorted in the PLL, can just crush guys out of an invert and from low wings. And those are things that PLL offenses just love to do right now. So, you know, I think he's a good fit for a PLL offense. And he's a guy I would love to see get a shot. My kind of outsider, and I kind of tweeted this a little bit last night, but I go all the way down to D3 and I'm taking Salisbury's Brad Apgar if he's available. He is like a defensive player of the year level player down there. And, you know, I think when we looked at the entry draft and going in, you know, Coach Bates over at the Archers was saying he was looking for defenders who can be physical and can be mean, you know, at the goal line with guys like Rambo. Those are the kind of defenders he wanted to add. And he did it. He got, you know, he got Hossack and he got Warren Jeffrey. So he accomplished that. But I think that style of defender, that type of defender, physically imposing and can play mean, that kind of guy is valuable in the league right now, especially, as we've already said, at a position that's a little bit thin on depth. So, you know, Apgar's sitting there at 6'4", 215, and plays with a nasty streak and has great footwork. he's a guy who, if that's the kind of defender you're targeting, and if that's the kind of defender the league is looking for, you know, teams in the league are looking for, love to see him get a shot. You know, is he that much worse as you start getting down the list than some of these D1 guys whose names are in there because they play at, you know, at a more big time program or on the ACC network or whatever? I think he's right there with some of those guys. So I'd give Apgar a shot for sure on my team.
So I'll give you a question on you know, because this is a deep draft, because we're talking about, you know, some of these players that are going to get drafted may not even, you know, see a game field. Are we inclined to see maybe some fun little trades going on during this process?
Well, the trade window is still open. The trade window doesn't close for another, for another week, mm-hmm. you know, and the draft is on Monday. Yep. So, you know, I think it's possible, in terms of who gets traded for what or anything, you know, if you wanted to try and draft a guy and trade him for picks in a future draft or something like that, yeah. I think that makes sense. Because if you wanted to try and position yourself to grab a guy next year, like a Chris Gray or Mekhi Montgomery mm-hmm. or, you know, Brendan Nickturn or somebody's, you know, Sisselberger, if you don't think you're getting a faceoff guy this year, or you want, you know, you're worried that maybe your guy might retire in the next year, or you want to add some depth, you don't think you'll be able to get, you know, an Erlin or a Gallagher this year, so you're targeting him next year, you try and, you know, position yourself for a class next year that's not exactly a huge step down from this one. I think that makes sense to do. I think if we were going to see players traded for players, I think that probably would have happened already. Because I, you know, the kind of thing where you improve your team that way, unless these coaches are just flabbergasted by how the college draft goes and they really don't get anybody they thought they would get, then they're probably have a pretty good idea of, you know, who they're going to try and target and what they're expecting to land. So I think that the idea of training to position yourself for a future draft, even on draft night, I think makes sense.
Yeah, I just see this potentially leading up to that based on, you know, who's in the league currently, you know, the MLL coming over and going through, you know, that piece and absorbing some of those guys out of the player pool. And now you're sitting here and you've got this big draft coming up, and I'm saying, boy, I don't know how many spots there are left, candidly, as you go through this. Your point, there's probably specific players. I mean, I think you hit it on the head earlier, and I think this goes with most of the teams, which is, you know, there's specific needs now. You know, it used to be in the draft, you just kind of draft the best player on the board, come down, and you grab them, right? Now there's to your point, I think you mentioned it was more to the surgical draft, the surgical strikes, and I think you're there this year. I think this is going to be a big year of that.
Yeah, I think it needs to be. You know, you can't spend, if you have like a top five pick, you can't spend it on a guy who's not going to dress for you week one.
Right.
Or, you know, or on a guy who you think might beat out some of your attackmen or something like that, but might not. Like, you need to go into this and make sure you get the pieces that fix where you have holes. And it might be guys that are a little bit down, you know, the big boards and the lists and everything out there. But if he's the guy that fixes your need, and you're, you know, if you're the Archers and, you know, Jake Haraway or whoever is sitting there and falls for you, but Ryan Tarasenko is there too, you probably need to take Ryan Tarasenko. You probably need to take somebody like that and not just, you know, pile up these offensive weapons, because you've got a ton already. You can't afford to, you know, if you add Haraway or you add another attackman or something like that, then like, are you sitting down like a Christian Mazone, or like who's not going to play anymore so you can play him? And I don't know if that's a move I'd make right now.
Yeah,
I
see the whips in that position that we were just chatting about, right? Is trying, you know, right. Maybe trading for some future draft pick, because they've got such a powerful team right now, and you know, they'll get better, they'll get a little better through the draft, but you know, to your point earlier, I don't know how much better they're going to get based on what they currently have, right? They got the same team coming back a little bit. But here's a team that can start planning for the future, which is something that I don't know that we've really seen in professional lacrosse yet, have we? I mean, have we seen a team that's been that solid where you're saying, I'm going to start planning for the future versus that immediate need kind of thing?
I don't think it's been in a place where like the distance between number one and number two, between the whips and whoever you have second, is so wide,
yeah,
as it is in pro lacrosse right now. I mean, you know what the Whips can do? The Whips can go ahead and take Jared Bernhardt and let him go play football, and maybe he'll come play for you next year because they don't need him right this summer anyway. And if you get him down the line and nobody else wants him because they want somebody who can play for them this summer, then Jared Bernhardt to the Whips makes a whole ton of sense all of a sudden. So, you know, but that's the kind of thing that the Whips can do going in. They can take some project guys or some guys and see how they do, you know, which is kind of like what they did last summer, you know, with guys like Sean New and those kind of players. Like, those weren't guys that are going to come in and take, you know, Tim Muller's spot or anything like that. They're not going to beat out Matt Dunn for a spot. But, you know, you make your strength stronger if you're already that good everywhere. You know, they have the best player in the league, you know, at LSM, probably at faceoff right now. You know, a top three-ish goalie. They have the defensive player of the year. They have the only two MVPs the league has ever had. Like, they're just so loaded, it's out of this world. So, you know, for them, yeah, you know, the needs they have to fill are Ty Warner is going to medical school at Harvard, and Boccaccio and Sievert's retired, and Tuttle is on the Cannons now. So they already have TJ Camizio, who I'm convinced is going to be a good player for them. I know he didn't do a ton for them in the bubble, but, you know, based on his time in the MLL with the Blaze, I think he's going to be an excellent player. They added Charlie Hayes, who's awesome. They added Aslanian, who's like another Brad Smith. And then they added Brian Cole, who's a gigantic midfielder who's, you know, not that far removed from like a 40-40 season. Like, he's absolutely that Blaze season with him and Mazzone at midfield just setting the world on fire. It's only 2 years removed. Like, it's not like the guy's lost a step since then. So, you know, I think they're already in a place where the guys they lost, they've replaced. And on college draft night, if they want to acquire picks for the future to try and deal with guys that retire down the road or, you know, something like that, or if they just want to draft some depth and protect themselves from injury or anything like that, then I think that makes sense too. You know, they don't even need faceoff depth. They added Kevin Reisman. Like, they're good. Mm-hmm. They're good everywhere.
I just really thoroughly enjoy listening to Dan talk about all these former machine guys being so instrumental.
Dan, you have to understand, Bear sits here through this, and every time a machine player pops up, I can see it. You see, we're on Zoom because we talk to each other through Zoom, so we can, you know, try and not step on each other as much as we do anyway. But I look at him, and he brightens up. Every time there's a machine play, it brightens up. His eyes get big. He gets all excited. We got to get this guy a coaching gig.
Yeah, I'm excited about the guys that I never got to coach. It's awesome. So anyways, moving on. So what about some of these, like Tanner Cook, Trey LeClair? I mean, I'm not exactly sure where do we sit with the travel right now for Canada. Do you know that? Do either one of you guys know that? I just didn't know. Like, I'm thinking about things that might affect the draft. Like, are these guys free to travel, or are they going to be, you know, does that hurt their draft situation, or are they just going to stay here in the States, or are they going to be able to get that visa, that work visa, to stay here? I haven't really thought about that until just now. I'm like, man, Trey LeClair, Tanner Cook, these guys are great. You know, I mean, they're giants, first of all. I mean, you had a 6'4", 2", whatever, you know, pound. I was trying to look it up to see where we are with our travel to Canada, but I know that's been an issue, obviously, with other sports and, you know, some of these guys. Either one.
Yeah, I'm sure Coach Towers is salivating at the thought of adding both Tanner Cook and Trey LeClair to his team full of guys with a Canadian passport. You know, I think the last I heard was that the league was working with a couple of places in the States to try and get all these guys vaccinated if they could, if they weren't vaccinated already. Because I know the vaccine rollout in Canada is going differently than it is here in terms of availability and who can get vaccinated depending on where you live and all that other stuff. So the league was trying to get, I think, as many guys as they could vaccinated, you know, basically as soon as they could, because, you know, the vaccine, you need like a month to take it because you get the two shots and all that. And then I know there are guys who are making arrangements to stay in the States for the summer. And so they'll avoid the travel back and forth and having to deal with border stuff that way. But I think the league is on top of it, and I think they have solutions for some of these guys. So whether it's get vaccinated and stay here, or, you know, we'll help you with visas or whatever the, you know, the situation is, I don't think it's a situation where, you know, if you're thinking about taking Tanner Cook, should you pass on him because you're worried about travel? No, I think you'll be okay.
Well, for our listeners, Dan, I will let you know that that is a difference between the old MLL and the PLL. Like, the PLL is definitely a find a way league. They'll find a way. The MLL was definitely find a way not to make it happen. Unfortunately, Tanner Cook and Trey LeClaire would have been non-factors in this draft. If it would have been 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah. And those are guys who, I mean, I love Tanner Cook for the PLL and PLL offenses and what they try and do right now. There's so many of those two-man, three-man game concepts and those box concepts that play from the wings and play with, you know, big littles behind or have inverts. And Tanner Cook, I mean, just go watch him. Watch what happens when he gets shorted and he takes a shorty behind at UNC. It's just like it's the juggernaut running through people. He's just so big and he's so skilled with his hands. I love him as a fit, you know, obviously in particular for the Chaos, because that's just their brand right now. But I think a lot of teams can use a guy like him and you don't need to have the ball on his stick. You know, in those 2- and 3-man games, he can be your pick guy and play it correctly and in a way that puts pressure on the off ball defense. You know, I really, really like Tanner Cook a lot. I think I might be higher on him than some other people. But, yeah, I love Tanner Cook in the PLL.
Well, Dan.
He is 6'4", 215.
6'4", 215.
Yeah.
Well, Dan, listen, it was great having you on. Obviously, folks that are going to listen to this are going to listen to you and realize that not only do you shoot out some Twitter stuff that's thought-provoking, but you know your shit. So, you know, thanks for coming on and jumping our show up a level, because Bear and I would have stared at each other and talked about coffee or pizza or something like that. But now we've been elevated.
Oh, yeah, you brought the IQ to the show.
Very nice of you to say. Yeah. This has been a ton of fun, man. I really appreciate you guys having me on. I love talking this stuff. I could do this for hours.
Well, we'll probably, you know, maybe, hey, listen, maybe Bear, we'll grab him again after the draft and see how we all talked and said and what happened, and we can all either, you know, puff out our feathers or hide in the corner.
Well, we could do a draft show. You know, we could just be on the air during the draft.
My new producer.
I don't know. I'm just Bear's. I mean,
We
haven't done a late night show in a while. I drink coffee for this show. I mean, I've missed drinking beer for the late night shows.
I might have a special surprise for you next week, though. Just letting you know.
Okay.
I'm not going to say anything more than that. I've been working out a player that I've wanted to speak to. So.
Damn, what player, what all-time player would you love to hear on our show?
And it's not a Syracuse player.
This is a challenge I give Mike all the time. Like, he asks me, who do you want? I'm like, Chief or Lions. Boom, we get it. He gets him. You can't throw a name out there that Mike can't get.
So this is not a Syracuse player. This is not a Syracuse player. So, and it's and he's currently playing, but it's a good player. I've wanted to chat with him myself. So this is one for me, Bear. This is one for me, not for you.
It's all about you. I want to hear Dan's call. I want to hear, who do you want to hear, Dan?
Man, I mean, like, I've reached a point in my life where most of the time the outcome of the game I just don't care about. I watch games to see my players that I like and see these guys do things that are like incredible on a lacrosse field, and I just hope I get to see that, and like, you know, the outcome of the game is what it is. But my favorite players to watch have always been guys like Joel White has always been a favorite of mine. Jordan Wolf, John Rannigan, I'm just thinking of guys in even just the Chrome right now. You know, always loved watching, he doesn't play anymore, but Joe Fletcher was tons of fun to watch play because of, like, the way he kind of just, his, like, unorthodox, I would call it, I guess, stance and
praying
way
mantis.
He played defense was, yeah, like, just stalking people. He was always kind of fun to watch play. Guys like that have always been been favorite.
So who do you want on the show, Dan? That's what I'm asking.
Here's the deal.
You want us to get Joel White?
Let's do this. We'll get someone.
We get all the Syracuse guys.
I would say Joel White then. Yeah, Joel White's been a favorite player of mine for a long time.
All right, done.
So
we're getting Joel White on the show.
To play.
Done.
He didn't play last summer. I hope he plays this summer and plays a bunch more years.
All right, we'll get Joel White on. Bear, how about this? We get Joel White on, and then we have Dan back on that very show.
Yeah, done. Dan, we're getting you on the show. What, Joel, your favorite player to watch. It's a done deal. Wrap it up.
Right. I love it. You guys are the best.
All right, guys. Listen, another second cup of coffee. I think we're on our about 72nd cup of coffee here, Bear. But another good show. Dan, thanks a lot again. I really appreciate you coming on. And those that just listened to you, like I said, you brightened up our show. We would have been babbling for a while. So thank you.
This was great. Yeah, again, thanks so much for having me on, guys. This was really a blast.
All right, Dan, we'll talk.
All right, be well.
Well, Bear, there you go. What do you think?
That was fun.
Well, I'll tell you, he is full.
High IQ guys on.
Yeah, you got it. It carries the show. We can sit back and just sip our coffee.
Exactly. That's what it's all about.
So now, he definitely a knowledgeable guy. Knows he's been, like I said, I met him way back when like you said, when the Outlaws played the Lizards at Fairfield U, and it was just kind of funny. We met randomly, and so then when I saw him start popping up on Twitter and all the stuff he was saying, I was like, hey, I know that guy. So it's been pretty cool. So thanks for grabbing him on. He was a great guest.
Absolutely. Thanks for not having someone prepared. So I just reached out to him. And
I'm telling you, I got someone. I'm working on it. All right, man. Well, listen, have a great weekend. Monday. I don't know if we're going to do a Monday night show. What do you think? You can. You got all this coaching. You coach more than anybody in the world.
I honestly think we might. The draft is so late. I think we're pretty good. I think we can actually go on air during the draft. It's pretty. It's like a 10:30. Oh, I'll probably be in bed. I'm not gonna lie.
10:30. Oh,
I don't know.
10:30. Jeez, I'm asleep for 4 hours already.
I was just saying by myself, my alarm.
Yeah, I'll have to wake up to do the show. All right, well, we'll talk about it.
How about we just follow up next Friday?
Yeah, we...
the recap.
We put the work into this show, boy. I'll tell you, nothing but the best.
I'm not staying up for this show. Are you kidding me? I'll be in bed.
All right, man. Listen, take it easy, and we will see. We'll talk to you guys that listen, and you'll hear us next Friday.
Sweet.